Hello and welcome to the Silver King's War. I'm Michael Sievers, the writer, producer, and creator of this podcast series about my father's Second World War as a B-26 bombardier. Today, we begin the fourth play in this series, entitled Who is Della? And we are in Act 1, titled A Prominent Patient, Scene 1, entitled Baltimore. And it begins with Michael, the narrator. The scene is in the plush, book-lined office of a prominent Baltimore law firm, Ober, Williams, and Grimes. And it begins with two men sitting at a conference table in a large private office filled with seminal legal books and World War I memorabilia. It's late December 1955, and Tommy D'Alessandro Jr. is beginning his third term as Baltimore's 39th mayor. The Baltimore Colts head coach, Wee Bubank, has just signed Johnny Unitas, who had been cut by the Pittsburgh Steelers, to a $17,000 a year contract as a backup quarterback. Frank Ober Jr., the firm's managing partner and World War I veteran, and Stanley Silverfield, 32, a World War II veteran, are reviewing the papers of Glenn L. Martin, Ober's client, who died on December 5th of 1955. Martin, who was 69, had a fatal cerebral hemorrhage at his Chestertown, Maryland, Eastern Shore farm. And Glenn Martin will appear in this scene to speak about his relationship with Stanley and talk about his sister, Della, and Della will appear to read I Am Della. Stanley and Frank are reviewing and discussing Martin's obituary, published on page one of the New York Times the day he died. Michael continues. Glenn Martin, who never married and lived with his mother, Minta, in Baltimore's exclusive Guilford neighborhood until her death in 1953, left a multimillion-dollar estate. In their beginning, son and mother, working together in the early 20th century, built a biplane in an empty rented church. Within years, Martin Manufacturing was building planes in Los Angeles warehouses before America entered World War I. Now, 44 years after Della Martin's commitment, Stanley Silverfield has graduated from the University of Maryland's Glenn Martin Institute of Technology in 1950, and joined the company as an aeronautical design engineer. Stanley met Glenn Martin in August of 1944 at an Army Air Corps replacement depot, Barksdale Airfield in Shreveport, Louisiana. The Silver King was training with a crew to learn how to fly a B-26, the soon-to-be legendary Martin Marauder. The meeting was a coincidence, but significant to events during and after Stanley's war. General Hap Arnold, the U.S. Army Air Corps commander and a World War I flying veteran, had invited Martin to visit a B-26 training site. The Silver King's crew was on the tarmac as Martin's Air Corps entourage stopped to inspect the plane and speak with the crew. Stanley had a brief, specific conversation with Glenn Martin about his job as the bombardier. The excitement in the King's voice surprised Martin, as did his knowledge of the B-26 design. Now, 11 years later, Stanley's relationship with Glenn and Minta Martin has placed him in Frank Ober's Pratt Street office to discuss Della Martin's history and future. This is Glenn L. Martin, known worldwide as the Flying Dude, who steps from the shadows into a single light on the stage. And he begins, "When Stanley joined my company in 1950, after summer jobs in Middle River and his graduation from Maryland, he was a junior designer. He was also a special young protege to me. And Stanley's timely arrival at Martin Manufacturing as a professional engineer coincided with a deep backlog of military contracts. I knew when we hired him that Stanley's Air Corps active duty separation in the fall of 1945 required him to remain available for service as a reserve officer. The post-war Pacific Theater was a cauldron of conflict. The month that Stanley graduated from the University of Maryland's historically named Glenn L. Martin Institute of Technology in June 1950, the United States entered the Korean War. At that time, Martin Manufacturing had $425 million of contracts to design and build America's latest war machines. And I made certain that Stanley's new job was deemed essential to the nation's war effort, which kept him hard at work on the American home front. Stanley was 27 when he joined the company, and I, long ago close to marriage, never had a spouse or children. Our relationship was very important to me. It was my opportunity to have a son. This is Michael, the narrator. Their relationship, close to one of father and son, meant that Glenn Martin, a very private man, decided to share a dark family secret with Stanley. He told our hero, the king, the story of his sister Della. But Glenn Martin never told the Silver King about his rationale for a difficult post-war public contest between the Navy and Air Force based on 9 famous pages known as the Anonymous Document. It happened in 1947. Stanley was a University of Maryland student studying aeronautical science on the GI Bill. President Harry Truman had designated the Air Corps, formerly within the Army of the United States, as a separate branch of the nation's armed services, now known as the United States Air Force. Glenn Martin, continuing to compete as a major armament industrialist, joined an effort to challenge the efficacy of the B-36, a plane built by one of his competitors, Convair. The Navy and Army were historic Martin manufacturing clients, and a decision to support an inter-branch dispute made Glenn L. Martin a surprising presence for such a sophisticated salesman. His rationale was profit. The Air Force's new B-36 bomber program was supported by millions of dollars already authorized for other Air Force programs that had been reallocated to procure more super bombers. And Martin Manufacturing had built 536 B-29 Boeing Super Fortress bombers at the government's Omaha, Nebraska plant, including the planes that delivered the devastating end to the Pacific War. As the lights go up on this scene, Stanley and Frank Ober are having a conversation. And it begins with Frank Ober Jr., Glenn Martin's lawyer. "Stanley, it's nice to see you again. I'm sorry about the circumstances. Glenn was quite a man. He admired and trusted you. As your relationship grew professionally and personally, it changed his life and his mother's life as well." And Stanley, the Silver King, ever humble, "Thank you, Mr. Ober. I appreciate your kind words. I am so pleased that you and I have met throughout these years." And Frank Ober, "I agree, Stanley. Glenn made it clear that he wanted you to help find Della, work to salvage the decades of personal loss, and have a role in her life." And the Silver King, "I am honored to help you. Mr. Martin spoke about Della in difficult, guilt-driven language. Her life haunted him." Frank Ober Jr., "That's true, Stanley. Now it's our job to lift that burden from his legacy and work to give Della a life she never had." And the Silver King, "How may I assist our search, Mr. Ober?" And Frank Ober Jr. to Stanley, "Stanley, this will be a complicated, time-consuming process. I will need you to assist me full time. And the king, I'm ready for the work, sir. I've taken a leave of absence from the firm. Mr. Martin's death, coming 2 years after losing Minta, has hit me hard. And Frank Ober Jr., I know it's a difficult time, Stanley, but for me that's excellent news. I really need your help and support on this. Glenn's estate provides you a salary as his personal representative to administer its complex execution. And the king, and how shall we begin? And Frank Ober Jr., first, let's get you an office near me. And second, we'll confirm that Della's still in Patton State Hospital. Then we'll find a top-flight California law firm to work with us through the process and free her. And the Silver King, and how shall we find that firm? And Frank Ober Jr., well, let's begin on the telephone and then plan to attend the American Bar Association winter meeting in Chicago. When you settle in, I want you to read these letters about Della. And now the Silver King, standing and turning, stepping forward under a single light to address the audience in emotional terms. He begins, August 28th, 1950, addressed to Mr. Glenn L. Martin, 3703 Greenway, Baltimore, 18, Maryland. Dear Mr. Martin, I am enclosing copies of the letters received from the Patton State Hospital. The originals are being retained in my office in the event you should ever desire them. The enclosed copies may be destroyed if you desire whenever you are through with them. Sincerely, W. Kennedy Waller, M.D., 512 Cathedral Street, Baltimore 1, Maryland. And the Silver King continues. August 23rd, 1950. To W. Kennedy Waller, M.D., 512 Cathedral Street, Baltimore 1, Maryland. Dear Dr. Waller, on August 21st of 1950, Miss Della Martin, file number PSH5848, was taken from this hospital by Mr. and Mrs. Gormley, owners of the Monterey Sanitarium at 3701 South San Gabriel Boulevard in San Gabriel, California. We are enclosing a carbon copy of our letter to the sanitarium staff, which is self-explanatory. Yours very truly, O.L. Garricky, M.D., Medical Superintendent, by Joseph Andiola, Social Service Department, Patton State Hospital, Patton, California. And our Silver King, in a way that was similar to his intense descriptive war letters, continues to read. August 23rd, 1950. Mr. H. J. Gormley, Monterey Sanitarium, 3701 South San Gabriel Boulevard, San Gabriel, California. Regarding Martin Della, PSH5848. Dear Sir, this is in regard to Miss Della Martin, whom you called for on August 21st, 1950, to be on leave of absence to your care in the Monterey Sanitarium. Bills for her care are to be sent to the patient's brother, Mr. Glenn Martin, 3703 Greenway, Baltimore, 18, Maryland. The following is a brief summary of the patient's history and present condition. Miss Martin was committed to this hospital on November 8, 1911. At that time, she was 28 years old, single, Protestant. The petition stated that she was acting in a strange and incoherent manner. Imagined she can read other people's thoughts and that they can read hers, has various delusions and hallucinations of hearing. The king continues, extremely religious, believes she can hear God's voice talking to her and that she has been commissioned to redeem the world. During the patient's stay in the hospital, she has been depressed at times, still imagines she sees people and hears God's voice, is sometimes noisy, sending and receiving wireless messages, remains in poor contact with her surroundings. Patient remained here continually for 39 years. Her ward physician stated recently that she has a moderate cardiac involvement and is sometimes cyanotic, and her pulse is frequently irregular. Miss Martin is ambulatory, but generally sits on the ward or in the yard. She eats and sleeps well, is tidy in habits and fairly so in appearance, rather seclusive in makeup, cooperative to the best of her ability, even helps occasionally with simple tasks on the ward under supervision. Mentally, she is delusional and confused. At the present time, she is a rather simple, senile psychotic who needs further custodial care. She is somewhat obese and weighs 165 pounds. A carbon copy of this letter is being sent to Dr. Waller, who is Mr. Glenn Martin's physician and has helped work out this placement. Yours very truly, O.L. Garicki, M.D., Medical Superintendent by Joseph Andriola, Social Service Department, with a copy to W. Kennedy Waller, M.D., from the Patton State Hospital in Patton, California. And this is Della Martin, Glenn's sister, as she steps from the stage shadows and faces the audience under a single light and reads I Am Della, a poem by Kelly Sievers in 2020.
I, Della Martin, at age 28, was committed as emotionally unstable, a religious fanatic, and later as schizophrenic to the Patton State Hospital. Built in 1890, Patton was seen as a state-of-the-art mental health care facility. Discharged 45 years later at age 74 on medication, I was sent to a private home with a caregiver. I lived there and traveled with my caregiver companion, Viola Powell, until my death at age 90. I inherited an estate from my brother, Glenn Martin, which became the basis for the Della Martin Foundation in Los Angeles, California, which has underwritten academic research in mental health since 1975. I am Della. 1. D is for diagnosis. A divide entered me. I am cleaved in two. Sometimes the eye of me floats in a gentle sea, cradled. Other times the who of me rages in the white vortex of a river. I tumble in turbulence, waiting for the river to spit me out. Cold, this kind of waiting. This kind of life. 2. E is for everlasting. No one here sees me labor every day in his vineyard. I know the Father will reward me. The evil one betrays beneath black wings at the edge. No, no, do not listen, I cry, but he hisses in the embers of forever torment. I have seen a great white egret. He flies here on a reef of good news. Praise the Father, flares within me. Grace, I shout, his everlasting grace will free us all. 3. L is for lunar. The moon breaks apart in a grim sky and falls through my night, a white fire. I kick my blankets, run. There is lightning in my limbs. Shush, they say, and leash me to the canvas, lower me into the tub, leave me in the silence of water. A lilt of light enters me. A garden of lupine, lilies, and locust trees laced with song. And he walks with me, and he talks with me. I listen. 4. L is for where I live, in my soul, a locket of light I guard. They have placed me in this labyrinth of rooms for nothing. They feed me loaves of bread and teach me to weave on their loom. So proud they are. They ask me what year it is, and I tell them, no year. I live between the years, rounded with stones, like a lighthouse at sea. 5. A is for alone. Mother and brother left to travel east. I don't care. They never belong to me. They belong to each other. Father signs to keep me in this fate. Addlebrain, he calls me. Adrift. His words boil in me. I look in the mirror. We here are all marked by words. My name is Della. In a far window, I watch mourning doves scuttle beneath acacia trees, feeding. They flap their wings and rise.
This is the end of Scene 1, titled Baltimore, in Act 1, A Prominent Patient, in the fourth play in this series, entitled Who is Della? And you are listening to The Silver King's War.